Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, U.S. and Russian officials sit down to speak about ISIS. We'll hear from our correspondent at the Kremlin. We'll have a preview of the greatly anticipated Republican U.S. presidential candidate debate.
Tonight should be an interesting show, to say the least.
You'll have new rules next time you fly your drone in the U.S. And who will headline this year's Super Bowl game? It's right here on The Voice of America. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry sat down for talks with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov in Moscow today. Correspondent Pam Dawkins is traveling with the U.S. official and joins us on the line from the Kremlin. Welcome, Pam.
Thank you.
What does the Secretary of State hope to accomplish with these meetings?
Well, there are several goals for this meeting. Earlier today, the Secretary met with Foreign Minister Lavrov, and both of them said that the focal points would be Syria, the Islamic State, and Ukraine. Kerry said he hoped to find common ground. The two of them shook hands and then sat down. They smiled at each other as they sat at opposite ends of the table at the Foreign Ministry building. The U.S. has been pushing for a third meeting of the International Syria Support Group, hopefully in New York on Friday. And this is part of a broader plan to have some kind of a political framework in place in early January for dialogue between the Assad government and the moderate Syrian opposition. Of course, Russia is a backer of Syrian President Assad. The U.S. is hoping that the Assad regime will engage in dialogue.
The United States and Russia have different approaches for what is going on in Syria. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, there are gaps in some. One, of course, deals with the different viewpoints concerning the fate of Syrian leader Assad. Backer of him says it's up to the Syrian people to decide on their leader's future. The United States has said that Assad cannot be part of any long-term political resolution to Syria. There are also the military campaigns. The U.S. is still accusing Russia of mostly targeting targets outside of the Islamic State, whereas the U.S.-led coalition has been focusing on Islamic State targets in Iraq and Syria.
Before Moscow, Kerry and you were in Paris. What do we know about discussions there?
Well, in Paris, there were a couple of focal points after wrapping up a series of sessions on climate change. Kerry met with foreign ministers. This was a French-led ministerial meeting, and it was described as laying the groundwork with the Syria agenda, hopefully groundwork for what leaders are anticipating will be a meeting on Friday in New York to look at moving forward with the plans for political dialogue.
Well, thank you very much, Pam.
Thank you.
For a look at what is trending on social media today, I'm joined by Charlie Hensler. Welcome, Charlie.
Hi. So every day on Twitter, there's many topics that vie out for people's attention, but today we can see people's love for space travel is clearly playing a role in rocketing the trend hashtag Tim Peak to the top of many people's hashtag use. It's been used over 6,000 times in the past hour, according to Topsy.com, a website that tracks social media trends. The most memorable tweet on the launching of Tim Peak, the first British astronaut into space, has come from British Prime Minister David Cameron. From his Twitter handle, @David_Cameron, he tweeted, "It was great to watch Tim Peak blast off on his mission to join the International Space Station." This tweet was accompanied by a picture of Cameron watching Tim Peak's rocket launch on a TV screen. This seemingly innocuous tweet, though, inspired a host of parody tweets. For example, one Twitter user, @CR3, tweeted, "Try turning it off and on again," with a picture of Cameron's TV screen replaced by a TV system setup menu. And other Twitter users replaced Cameron's TV screen of watching the rocket launch with images from things like Star Wars and Pokemon.
Well, what else is trending?
Also, hashtag GOP debate. Many people are tweeting that in anticipation of the final GOP presidential primary debate of the year, as well as hashtag LA is gaining traction. because of the recent shutdown of the Los Angeles school districts.
Why was it shut down?
Because of some sort of threat. They really haven't said why or where it came from yet. It's a very, very new breaking story right now.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Charlie. I appreciate you stopping by.
All right, thank you, Susan.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A couple of months ago, the internet buzzed with a rumor that a massive structure built by an advanced civilization of extraterrestrials might be orbiting a star located nearly 1,500 light years from Earth. Erratic dimming of a star known as KIC-846-2852 has baffled astronomers since its September discovery by citizen scientists. SETI International researchers at the Bocate Optical SETI Observatory in Panama searched for laser pulses from the star, but anyone hoping for evidence of an ET will be disappointed. SETI International says they did not find any evidence of an advanced civilization beaming intentional laser signals toward Earth. Periodically dimming star is often seen as an indication of an exoplanet, but the dimming pattern around the newfound star was sporadic and irregular. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Republican U.S. presidential candidates are holding their fifth and final debate for the year tonight in Las Vegas, and joining us on the line is Josh Hawley. He's a former senior advisor for the House Armed Services Committee and a staffer for Republican John Boehner. Welcome to our show, Josh.
Thanks for having me, Susan. Appreciate it.
Oh, no, I appreciate it. Hey, it's interesting what's going on right now in the Republican race. Donald Trump announced that he thought there should be a ban on Muslims entering the country until Congress can act on that, and his poll numbers actually rose. What is your reaction?
No, we've been seeing them rise for quite a few weeks now, and I think tonight should be an interesting show, to say the least. I think one of the clear takeaways here is that there's a dissatisfaction with the president at the moment, how he's handling national security, and specifically that he likely hasn't done enough to fight ISIS. And there's a real unease there, and I think that Mr. Trump he's tapped into that unease, and he appears to be riding that wave. The question is, how will this evening kind of play out? Will he continue to ride the wave, or will some of these policies that are proposed that might be difficult to work and might be unworkable, will there be the crescendo of that wave and become crashing down as we head into Iowa in January? I think that's one of the big questions still that's hanging out there.
Some of the candidates that are going to be speaking tonight have spoken out against Trump and his policy about Islam.
Yes, and I think you'll see that. I think that's been one of the things that a lot of the candidates, particularly, Governor Bush, Senator Rubio, Senator Cruz, how are they going to differentiate themselves with Donald Trump on some of these issues that resonate so well with the Republican base? I think it's going to be a tricky one, but they've also they've called out Donald Trump on some of his positions, particularly kind of the ban on Muslims in the United States, as being un-American, not being what the foundation is for the country, and unworkable as well, because you're not going to have that litmus test.
Well, Texas Senator Ted Cruz has been doing pretty well in polls lately. What do you think of him?
I think he will. He's also resonating because I think he taps into that same energy that Donald Trump is at the moment. He also seems to have kind of the conservative base, and you've seen his rise in Iowa. And I think it'll be interesting kind of how can he, the position that he has in the Senate, the position he has on the Senate Armed Services Committee, it really kind of gives him a platform to address some of these issues and really kind of have a seat at the policymaking table. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he continues to translate that into support in some of these key states, and whether or not, as the attention now focuses on him, you've seen Donald Trump come after him pretty aggressively in the last few days. So does that now begin to kind of mute some of his support, or does his support continue to rise? Because now you've seen some of the conservative talk radio hosts as well kind of rally around Ted Cruz and kind of push back against Trump, and both of them are kind of running as an anti-establishment campaign. So it'll be interesting to see if there's enough room for both of them kind of as we get further into the campaign. and as people actually start voting.
Well, thank you very much, Josh, for speaking with us today.
No problem at all, Susan. Thank you very much, and hope you enjoy the debate tonight.
Thank you. I hope you do, too.
Okay, thank you.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
On International Edition, American drone enthusiasts have some new rules, and Coldplay is playing the big game. The Federal Aviation Administration has released new guidelines on the use of drones in the nation. My colleague George Putich is following that story and joins us here in the studio. Hi, George.
Hello.
Hey, what did the FAA have to say?
Well, FAA finally released the regulations according to which all drones will have to be registered because there were problems with the security and some near misses in encounters of drones with regular aircraft. So FAA finally decided to put some regulation into it.
And do these steps go into effect immediately?
Almost immediately. December 21st is the first date until after which all drones purchased previously will have to be registered with FAA. The registering process is quite simple. It's online or on paper, of course. It costs $5 to register a drone, which is, interestingly, the same price FAA charges for registering any kind of aircraft.
Oh, that is interesting.
From Cessna to Boeing 787. And all drones, as I said, will have to be registered, all previously purchased drones. And then from February 16th, all drones will have to be registered before their first flight.
Now, this all is coming about because some near mishaps with drones and aircraft.
Correct. There were some mishaps. There were some close encounters, as I said, and which is making pilots very nervous. So FAA says the security is the primary reason, but they want also the public to be educated. They say everybody who is operating a drone is actually a pilot and needs to know something about flying the drone.
Well, what are some of these things people should know before they take off with their drones?
Basically, they have to keep the drones on the levels lower than 400 feet and also have to stay clear from the airports.
We've heard of some drones getting close enough to planes that the pilots have actually complained that the drones were in their way.
That is correct. Some people were very obviously negligent about the safety, so they were flying drones or maybe they were trying to get some videos of airplanes flying close by. So they were flying close to the airports, which is, of course, very dangerous and should be avoided at all costs.
Well, we've seen birds going into the engine of a plane and the trouble that can cause. Just imagine if a drone was sucked into an engine.
Correct. That would be really, really very bad.
Okay, well, thank you very much for stopping by.
You're welcome.
Traders continue to expect downward pressure on oil prices for the foreseeable future, although the prospect of higher U.S. interest rates could reverse the trend of seven-year lows. Monday, the price of oil hovered around $36 a barrel, although it fell below $35 a barrel in New York. Prices have fallen over 60% since June of last year. Carl Larry is an energy analyst with the Alexandria, Virginia-based consulting firm Frost & Sullivan. He notes a number of factors affecting the market, including an oil glut, slowing economies, mild weather, and technological advances such as the extraction technique of hydraulic fracturing or fracking.
I think the fracking has helped America become oil independent, and that's a really big deal. And with that independence, what's happening is that we're seeing the economy rally and the dollar rally behind it, and that's causing this overall effect where we're seeing oil prices lower, but again, American oil dependence really waning.
Will the oil glut continue?
Well, I think that the manufacturers, the producers, have to cut back at some point. The big deal here is that America has become independent on making our own oil, and what we've done is pushed back all the imports that we were getting. All those imports that we pushed back add up to about 4 million barrels a day, and that's where that glut's coming from. You combine that with the decline of the economy in Europe, the decline of the economy in China, and now you have a really big problem. So the producers will have to cut back.
There is concern that the U.S. Federal Reserve will raise interest rates, also affecting the price of oil.
You know, this has a really big impact on oil. What happens is that the value of the dollar goes higher. And since oil is priced in dollars, it means that it's going to decline because it's going to really decrease the buying power of everybody outside of America. What you have here now is a very expensive American oil, but a very, very poor demand for American oil outside of here. And as long as the barrel is based in U.S. dollars, that's going to put a lot of pressure on oil outside of America.
And Carl Larry says in the long term, the push to reduce the use of fossil fuels will be a deterrent to increasing refinery production and the search for oil. But in the near term, he says, it will remain the cheapest way to access energy, especially for fragile economies. This is VOA.
This is Greenbeat for a healthier planet.
Most electric cars need a charge after just 300 or 400 kilometers, but not the new fuel cell vehicles like Hyundai's iX35, which powers its electric motor with hydrogen. Hyundai recently showed off its newest model on nearly every street in London. Laura King is Senior Manager of Public Relations.
So we've driven, photographed and filmed every single street in central London, as defined by the world-famous Cabby Knowledge. And that's actually over 2,000 miles.
The iX35 can reach a maximum speed of 160 kilometers per hour. Here's Robin Hales of Hyundai.
The only difference between this and an electric car is that this produces its own electricity on board, so it doesn't need to be plugged in.
Hyundai's iX35 fuel cell holds the record for the longest trip on a single tank of hydrogen. Hydrogen fuel stations, though, are far and few between. Only about a dozen stations in the United States have hydrogen, nearly all of them in California. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
One of the biggest annual music events is seen by about a billion people around the world, and it only lasts for about 15 minutes. It's the U.S. National Football League Super Bowl halftime show. This year, there is an added buzz because it is the 50th Super Bowl. Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins VOA's Jim Stevenson to talk about the headline act.
This is the golden anniversary Super Bowl, the 50th Super Bowl. So the National Football League is going to go all out. We now know who the headliner for the halftime show will be. It will be the English rock band Coldplay.
An interesting choice.
Yeah, Bruno Mars was the early favorite. And in fact, Bruno is going to be involved in this show. And you might remember he put on a killer halftime show in 2014,
right,
along with his special guest, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Well, the Latin Times reports that Bruno will curate this Super Bowl 50 halftime show. And I take that to mean that he will likely perform, and he will also bring a bunch of big-name guest stars. Now, Chris Martin, the lead singer of Coldplay, is good friends with Jay-Z and Beyoncé. Beyoncé, of course, was the headliner at the 2013 Super Bowl.
Right.
So she's got plenty of Super Bowl experience.
And some accused her of knocking the lights out in that game.
Well, you know, there is that possibility. And Beyoncé also shows up on Coldplay's brand new seventh album, A Head Full of Dreams. So if you put everything together, I think a a clearer picture emerges of what we can expect. Super Bowl 50 happens on February 7th, 2016, at Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara, California. For the past few years, this has been the trend with Super Bowl halftime shows, multi-artist extravaganzas.
The NFL, in the wake of the Justin Timberlake and Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction, likes to have these things tightly choreographed.
Well, they've loosened up a bit. You might remember that immediately in the wake of the 2004 wardrobe malfunction, they had a series of classic rock artists, people like Paul McCartney and Tom Petty. Prince was in there. They would be what you might call safe choices. Mm-hmm. Well, Coldplay is a safe choice, too. Most likely, they had Katy Perry last year. It's going to be a real extravaganza, though. I think they're going to pull out all the stops for this one. I think Coldplay will sort of be the eye of the hurricane, so to speak.
Absolutely. And they love to also have a lot of acts before the game as well for the fans. If you actually go to the game, there's a lot going on musically.
Yeah, they've come a long way. The earliest Super Bowls had college marching bands
right.
for their halftime entertainment.
Right. And who could forget Up With People?
Up With
yes,
People.
They did a couple halftime shows.
Way back in the 70s.
Yes.
I think the age of the modern Super Bowl halftime show began in 1993 when Michael Jackson was the feature performer.
I remember that one, and that was quite a spectacular. You can see that on YouTube, by the way, and, right. and looking at the old footage, wow, it's still a big halftime show.
Still holds up, and mm-hmm. things have never been the same since then.
Things that hold up here always is our Top 20 Countdown. We love to hear it every week. Ray McDonald is our host. Follow him on Twitter as well, Ray.
Ray on the hits.
That's all you need to know. Thanks for stopping by.
You got it, Jim.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As the Helsinki Final Act marks its 40th anniversary, it is critical that all members of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe remain faithful to its core principles. These principles include recognizing the inherent dignity and human rights of every person, respecting the sovereignty and territorial integrity of every participating state, and refraining from the threat or use of force across the OSCE region. In light of these commitments, the United States renews its call for Russia and the separatists that it backs to fully implement the Minsk agreements to which Moscow is a signatory. This includes the removal of Russian forces and equipment from eastern Ukraine and unfettered access for OSCE monitors. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has emphasized the importance of the Minsk agreement's provision for local elections in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine to be carried out under Ukrainian law and subject to monitoring by the OSCE Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights. There must also be a return to Ukrainian control of the border and the release of all hostages detained for politically motivated reasons. Meanwhile, Ukraine needs to do its part by withdrawing its heavy weapons and to negotiate in good faith the Donbas election procedures. This is a time for concrete steps, said Secretary Kerry at the recent OSCE ministerial meeting in Serbia, and to avoid what is a disastrous but unnecessary conflict, and to begin the process of rebuilding Ukraine's east. Elsewhere in the OSCE, protracted conflicts continue in places like Moldova's breakaway region of Transnistria, Georgia, and Nagorno-Karabakh. The protection of human rights and fundamental freedoms throughout the OSCE region continues to be a priority. In too many countries, said Secretary Kerry, non-governmental organizations are being restricted by new laws. Journalism is under attack, and the freedom of expression, including the media, is in jeopardy, sometimes by threat of force. There is no acceptable excuse for abusing the rights of citizens, for preventing journalists from doing their jobs, or from silencing legitimate political dissent. I hope that we will all reaffirm these fundamental ideals, said Secretary Kerry. The enduring promise of Helsinki should inspire all of us to tackle these shared challenges with renewed urgency and to continue our efforts in building a Europe and a Eurasia that is whole and free and at peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.